This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Season 3 finale. This is all the good stuff for the end. Like that set with Wanda Sykes. She's funny. She's cool. She's a good actress. Great casting. Maybe do that more often, Amy and Dan. I don't know. Just a tip.
Welcome.
I said just a tip.
Welcome back to Just the Tip.
Hey, there is a podcast on this network called Just a Tip, by the way. I've been on it. It's a good show.
Sure.
Welcome to Marvelous Mrs. Maisel Goys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Alice.
And we're the Maisel Goys. For the last time in season 3 of this show.
For the last time, May, I'm telling you.
We're wrapping.
I gotta do this by myself.
And then May's like, oh, you sure you gotta do it like that, Joel? Why can't we go out a little bit more? I gave you the electrician's number or whatever she says. She's a connector.
I don't know how to work into this bit.
Midge. Midge.
Ugh.
Wait.
I'm now anti-Joel somehow.
Woo-hoo-hoo. How'd that happen? Did it happen in this episode?
Kind of.
Oh, boy. Well, we better talk about it.
Previous episode, which I didn't talk about at all. I'm on cold meds. Sorry, everybody.
Oh, it's okay. Hey, in a way, everyone listening to a podcast is on a cold med because this is a medication for you on your commute to listen to. This is something to put into your ears and to give you thoughts so you don't have to think for yourself.
On your commute to work. All right, I feel like our guests can't jump in. We can't do this bit anymore.
Well, then let's have our guests jump in.
Let's have our guests jump in.
Our funny, sweet, talented, kind, and polite guest, friends and folks, she is a stand-up comedian. She is terrific. She has her own podcast, Self Helpless Podcast, and you can see her new special, Quarter Life Crisis, on Netflix. Friends and folks, give it the hell up for Taylor Tomlinson!
Thank you so much.
I love fucking streaming that podcast. I mean, that special.
No relation to Chris Tomlin or Lily Tomlin.
Or LaDainian.
Or LaDainian?
Hmm? LaDainian Tomlinson. That's a football player. That's the one I get.
Oh, well, you knew you were right in my strike zone with that. Yeah.
You were right in my goal strike zone.
I'm not one of these people who's like proud of the fact that I'm not into sports. I'm still shameful about it to a degree. I'm not like sports ball. Like, I do wish I had takes on the Patriots or the Super
Bowl.
I kind of, just to be able to be conversing with other people.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be annoying.
Just to make socializing easier.
Yeah. Well, because my family is very majority into athletics and they all played
like
growing up.
The only way to do it, though, is to be like, you have to be completely immersed. Like, whenever my boyfriend talks about sports with people, it's like, I'm just like, ugh. You have to know everything and then you have to have an opinion about it.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't have the energy for that.
And if you're going to do that, you have to pick like one sport to do that with because you can't know everything.
And then
about
you just
every
stand
sport.
There when everybody else starts talking about football and you're like the basketball person. You're like, yeah, that seems.
Yeah. All right, rugby 2020. That's what I'm getting into. I'm picking a lane. It's going to be rugby, lacrosse, and water polo.
Guy.
Taylor, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you for calling me polite.
I think you're polite.
I'll take it.
I think you're polite because of the conversation we had off mic.
Yeah, that's true.
But what's your relationship with the marvelous Mrs. Maisel?
I love the show.
Were you into like Paladino stuff before, like Gilmore?
Yes.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, big Gilmore Girls. That's like my comfort show that like I have on the road and stuff.
Yeah.
I love this show. I've seen it like a few times now. I feel like because it's like the one show I can watch and I don't think about death. Like that's what I tell people.
Gilmore
about.
Or Maisel?
Maisel.
Okay. Yeah.
This is the one where
people
are like, "Do you like it? Is it good? Is it about stand up?" I'm like, "No, it's." Like a fairy tale. It's not about stand-up, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a few moments that I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. But for the most part, I'm like, this is just like a fun, you know, period piece. Like, it's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, that. Remember that, what was it? It was last season, that conversation she had with Rufus Sewell, and he played like a guy named Declan McManus or something, or that's Elvis Costello, actually. And it was like, I guess it's a, and it was supposed to be about her stand-up career, and that was what gave her the fire to keep pursuing it. But it could be about painting, or it could be about writing your book or writing your musical, as we pitched last episode.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, I do think that it just so happens to be about stand-up, but it is sort of an interchangeable Mad Lib for an occupation.
Yeah.
In the way that, like, it's more just about, like, artistic process, I guess, and, mm-hmm. like, a woman in, like, a traditionally male-oriented space, mm-hmm. which is most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of them.
It's about her and it's about Susie. They're both doing that in different ways, kind of side by side.
There's definitely some category fraud now with like the Emmy stuff where it's like best supporting actress, Alex Borstein. It's like,
oh,
this is a, it's like Brad Pitt in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's like, this is a two-hander for sure.
Yeah.
But you do what you need to do to win your Emmys.
Yeah.
It's also an hour-long comedy.
Yeah.
It's true, and now that we've gotten to know Susie's family to a certain extent, we've followed her enough.
Oh, Tess, old Francie from Gilmore coming back.
I know.
How about that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about the mom sick plot line from the... Are you okay?
Not really.
Oh, I'm sorry, buddy. Mm. She's making it through. She's soldiering through somehow, but thankfully...
A lot of beverages around me.
Taylor and I are so jacked up right now that our energy will outpace yours
That's
so much.
Jesus talking.
See? Oh, that is Jesus talking and the Holy Spirit through
Speaking
us.
Speaking through you.
That's right.
Love to see it.
This is episode 308. This is our finale. And it's called A Jewish Girl Walks Into the Apollo.
God almighty. In heaven. It's just...
It's just so fun. I'm like, it's just like if you describe this show to someone and they're like, what's it about? And you're like, oh, it's like stand-up in the 60s. And yeah, this white lady goes to the Apollo and everyone loves her. And she's so funny. She crushes and she like eats their snacks on stage and they like jump up and down and start losing their minds.
Yeah. I texted you. She should be bombing right now.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. When she was on stage.
The Amazon Prime synopsis is Joel readies his club for its grand opening. Midge asks Moishe for a favor. Susie suffers a loss and turns to an unexpected source for help. And Midge learns a hard show business lesson. Written and directed by Amy Sherman-Palladino.
Fuzzy on mic.
And now it's time for something we do every episode. It's time for...
12 o'clock, rock, we're going to pop around
culture. Should I re-record it? Should I auto-tune
Never
it?
Never re-record
Never?
Ever.
First choice, best choice?
Oh my God, it's a canon at this point.
We take every pop culture reference
isolate your own vocals.
That'd be disgusting sounding. There's every... reference in the episode, pop around the culture.
They painted Babar on the ceiling and Eloise on the wall.
Ours will be better.
Really?
I'm gonna get the real Babar and shove his ass in the closet.
Christmas special, like with Bob Hope?
Yes.
You got the prime spot, Shirley Temple.
I walk a little funny, which might be fun since I'm a comic, right? Works the chaplain.
They'll talk in slang and fall asleep to Charlie Parker.
General Patton.
I let you slink off into the night like a goddamn Damon Runyon character.
Ava Gardner cheekbones. The man is so gorgeous that Arthur Miller's sniffing around him. He just puts on his Judy Garland shoes, clicks his heels together three times, and says, there's no place like Harlem. There's no place like Harlem.
Ooh. The Judy Garland stuff. Now, my question about this, and we'll get into it with the set, was Judy Garland in 1960 already kind of codified as... a queer signifier. Do you know what I mean?
Maybe this is what did it.
Because like, it's a revisionist history where like a friend of Judy took off after Midge accidentally outed Shia Baldwin at the Apollo. But like a friend of Dorothy's is totally a thing. Mm-hmm. But when did that iconography happen?
Well, we could... There's no way to look it up.
There's no way to know. Well, it feels like a specific. I feel like we'd have to watch a document. Well, you could have looked it up if you wanted to know.
I don't know what that is.
What?
Looking something up. I have a flip phone.
But it's.
And I'm volunteering for Joe Biden.
You're canvassing, right? Mm-hmm. Bloomberg. The only
Bloomberg.
The only reference I had to look up was Damon Runyon. Did you know who he was?
No.
He was a newspaper man and a short story writer. from the 1930s and 20s.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's I feel better now was. That I know that.
Yeah, it's a relief.
See, Mazelgoys, it's a fun comedy chat show. It's also educational.
It's educational.
It's here for your info.
Take it to a cocktail party.
Friggin' the Chaplin reference, Charlie Parker, Bob Hope, Ava Gardner, and wait, what was Miller?
Oh, gorgeous. Arthur Miller. Arthur Miller's sniffing around.
It's weird to have like analogs for people in real life and then have the real life references too.
It's
like,
true.
It's like when Studio 60 also was set in a world where SNL existed. So it's like, why would it? How would
it?
Because Asher, Costanza, like the Jason Alexander character, is supposed to be Arthur Miller.
Right.
But Arthur Miller also
is referenced in her stand-up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, it'd be like funny if she was like, it's like Asher Miller. Is
right. It's like supposed to be a pop culture reference to him. So yeah. Okay. So this episode, longest of the season, hour 15.
Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, a movie. Didn't think any of it should be cut.
I thought it was the best one. I'm so glad I got this episode.
Yeah.
Well, by far the best one.
The two best episodes of this season are this. And
Lenny Bruce?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, there's obviously nothing else, right?
The thing I loved most about the Lenny Bruce episode is that, and this is proof further that this show is a fairy tale, is that two very attractive, successful comedians had a moment and didn't fuck. I was like, this would never occur.
Yeah,
but
even,
that's cute. The
you even have a slight moment of, like, niceness between two comedians and they will just have sex.
I mean, we're being hyperbolic, but, to have a magical night like that and then be like, you know what? I'm going to go home. It's like, get out of here. That's not going to happen.
If you hear like Tales from the Road or anything like that, it's just like, that's not how it went down.
The story ends with, and then we didn't smash. Yeah. And we called a cab. Can you believe it?
Yeah. No.
So, yeah. Bottle up that chemistry. That was the last episode of Lenny Bruce in this season.
Yep. Yeah.
Hopefully not in the show.
We Hopefully got
It's
not.
A countdown clock of 6 years.
Right.
Yeah, unless we just violate
Before I Die. I was reading an interview with Luke Kirby, who plays Lenny Bruce, and he's like, I've shot total on Marvelous Mrs. Maisel 12 days over
really?
The course of like 3 seasons. That's how much of a presence he makes in like the little
wow.
bits that he's been on. Can you imagine? Like, yeah, it was like a
what
week
a
and
lucky
a half.
Duck.
Yeah.
That's good for
great.
Him.
That's perfect.
Good for whoever's dating
yeah,
him.
Yeah, go
now.
Get your paper.
Yeah, yeah, get the bag. Get the bag, Luke. So, by the way, did Moms Mabley look like she was dressed up a little bit like Paddington? Or is this a chicken and the egg situation?
That's just going to be you. Yeah, that's a you thing.
She had a floppy red hat on and like a long blue.
I think Paddington is post Moms Mabley.
Wait, is Paddington a Moms Mabley tribute?
I think that might be more accurate.
Doesn't Paddington wear like a little raincoat?
Yeah.
That's completely different.
But it's blue. Let me have this, Taylor.
Sorry, Tim. You're right.
I'm so glad they finally included Moms Mabley.
We literally talked about how, again, like a real life analog and then the fictional analog, because Sophie Lennon was kind of doing a Moms Mabley thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the crazy
her.
Thing is, like, if you compare Sophie Lennon's jokes to Moms Mabley's actual jokes. This is what like drives me crazy about the stand-up on this show. Is it like a real life allegory from even 20 years prior to when Midge is writing jokes and when Sophie Lennon is writing jokes is way funnier than any of them. Like Moms Mabley's stand-up is still funnier than anything else. That's
and
been
this was
up.
Probably beat for beat from it, what Sykes was doing.
It's hilarious.
Prejudice. I'm not prejudiced. I'm not. But I don't like no old man. I don't give a damn what color he is.
So funny. I'm so glad
like
they got Sykes.
Young baby. What about it? Can't no old man do nothing for me but bring me a message from a young man. That's all he can do.
So good.
Nothing old but some old money.
It's incredible.
It's such a relief too to listen to an actual stand-up comedian doing actual stand-up comedy on this show because you are
Isn't
like
that funny?
Oh, that does feel better.
You don't have to like
what is
pretend to laugh.
What a strange thing. Her last Netflix special, by the way, I
so
thought was
good.
So
fun. Yeah, she's
there's
amazing.
A bit that I show people all the time. It's the extended Bachelor bit with the microphone where she talks about, like, you can't be a feminist and watch The Bachelor at the same time. I wish they would, like, do it, like, where he just taps him on the forehead, but with his dick.
Yeah.
And she does a full, like, silent act out of it for two minutes.
Oh, my God,
amazing. That's the funniest, because she's a good actress. Mm-hmm. Or
she's
actor,
so fantastic actor.
Yeah. So, and yeah. As she is on the show, and I'm not that familiar with Moms to, like, do an A-B comparison. Like, is she nailing the voice or the body language?
Yeah.
But yeah.
It feels a little bit like over Cosby'd, like it's a little too much stuff in her mouth or something like mm-hmm. that. But yeah, I mean.
That's Mom's.
Like her impression of
Sykes,
Moms.
Sykes' impression of Moms.
Like, because she's trying to be old. Mm-hmm. You know, that this would be my one critique. But I love this and I love that they put her in. But yeah, it's just like, again, it's like, what, they have the template. You know, stand-up comedy is funny. I just, so much of this show has been me like ragging on like ASP's writing for Midge, because it's just like, it's like I've always said, like, don't write a new hour for her for every episode. Yeah. Just write one good hour and then use that hour throughout the entire show.
Yeah.
But they keep writing a brand new hour of shitty stuff every episode that we have supposed to believe that the whole audience is like losing their minds at. And you're like, it's not funny.
Taylor, have you ever done a set of completely unrehearsed material of stuff that just recently happened to you in the week or day?
An entire set? No.
Yeah. There's like ad libs and stuff.
Yeah.
But not like, there's well, ad libs. Here's my journal.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's ad libs and then there's the occasional mental breakdown.
Yeah.
Where you're like, is there anything here? But
yeah, she's having a mental breakdown every night.
Yes. It's every insane. Night. Yeah.
She's doing the thing that you see an open micer do when they've just given up and they've suddenly like, and they're just like, I mean, birth control, right? It's crazy. Yes. I don't even know what to tell you. You know, and she's doing that every night and killing in front of like stadiums.
Yeah.
Stadiums. It's Fenway insane. Park, baby.
I mean, this was insane. I mean, this was the second Sterling K. Brown is like, just go out and talk about Shy. I was like, nope. I know what's going to happen.
It's done.
Yeah. It's done. We know what's going to happen. It would have been so much better if they had her bomb and that's why she got fired.
True.
I feel like.
True. Ooh. That's a really good point.
Wouldn't that have been better? Like, finally, like, she's riding so high, she gets her apartment back, she thinks she's amazing.
Or have her bomb and they're like, yeah, you can't always do great. This is a shitty show to do bad on, but like, also, this is the reason, your real reason you're getting fired.
Yes.
And like, because if they came to her and they're like, we promise, she just, you know, she'll work on it, whatever. And they're like, that's not why she's getting fired.
Oh, no. Yeah, she was bad, but here's the actual. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah, because the way it works out in the show is that it is such like a crisscross of miscommunication that kind of absolves mm-hmm. everybody of any responsibility to a degree, where it's like Reggie says this to Midge, but Reggie doesn't know that Midge knows that Shy Baldwin's gay.
And so, if only they had cell phones.
Yeah, if they could tweet at each other, this would have been taken care of. But unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's why it's so sad at the end. But
Well, and I mean, he's so good. Like, him and Alex Borenstein acting together was just like, oh, this is so nice.
Oh, my God. Their conversation in the barbershop, which...
So good.
Okay, so good. So there is this... when there's a scene where Susie's listening to a radio fight. It's like, it's boxing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a boxing match? And then, like, she loses. But before then, there's just, like, a languid, long take of the camera just going into the barbershop and looking at this life. And all I could see is, like, Amy Sherman-Palladino behind her MacBook Pro in her all-pink office being like, an all-black barbershop. Type, type, type.
Yeah.
It's so funny to conceive. And, you know, I mean, the scene's good. And I love Reggie's energy in it. Like,
I wonder if she is letting, like, they have a black writer on the show. Like, it is like a man,
no?
young man. They're not having him write that.
Oh,
they have
really?
Writers to break the story, but no one writes dialogue but them.
Oh.
So, nope.
Wow. That's interesting.
But, yeah, and his, like... It's all Sterling, right? Like his mm-hmm. like aggressive but friendly but like watch your mm-hmm. back energy all at the same time that makes it so good. And the same thing that makes him so good at the very end of the episode. Mm. But yeah, their conversation about like what it means to be a manager of somebody I found mm-hmm. to be so interesting and touching.
What?
You really believe in this girl?
Aren't I supposed to?
It smells like trouble.
Why?
It just means you can't be objective.
Oh, believe me, I can be objective. I know when she sucks. I know when she's an asshole or dressed like a mental patient, she's incredibly high maintenance. I had to learn how to sew on sequins in the dark. She's always late. You gotta feed her every 2 hours, like a fucking parking meter.
Shit, I can't get shy to eat anything. That boy exists on coffee, gin, and compliments. I don't know how he has the energy. He's always been like that. Flashy, jumpy, but he can sing like no one else in the world.
That's subjectively speaking, right?
Yeah. No one else?
It's a strange job, managing another person's career. You think you're so important, and then suddenly you're running around Utah looking for the kind of toothpaste Shy likes.
Oh, fuck listens to Shy in Utah.
That's funny.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining. There's good times and bad times. When Shy's first record went gold, that was a good time. It's nice when they shine. You get to share in that, shine a little yourself. But then when they do bad things, and then you do bad things.
What bad things?
Things you don't want to do, but you have to. You hate it, you do it, and then you get paid.
Woo! Yay! Which I guess is the foreshadowing of the bad thing he has to do at the end of the episode.
Right.
But yeah, we were talking in the last episode, like the de-suitification of managers and agents on this show. So it's not just like a bunch of ravenous sharks and stuff just dealing with the money, but people who like actually made a bet and actually believed in a person.
Yeah.
And even Susie calling him out when he says like he sings like nobody else, and she says like, oh, objectively speaking, he sings like nobody else.
Yeah.
And
I wish my agents sat around and talked about their clients like this. Like, wow.
Wouldn't it be nice? Yeah. But then the episode opens with that scene of them in the diner that we so often see them in, mm-hmm. in like flashbacks and whatnot, on the day that she tells Joel that she's pregnant. And then they mix it in. I watched it so many times to figure out like the invisible cuts of like how they did the, it's very seamless.
Yeah. I didn't like, here's how, it's me starting to not like Joel. Like when they just were like him talking about trying to make a baby,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, it just felt like trying. Too much. I was like, shut up.
Oh, it's like every 15 minutes if you want.
Gross. All right, whatever. Like, fucking horn dog. Like, go cheat on me, you weirdo.
Till we get it right. And I am nothing if not a perfectionist.
Ugh. I don't know what. Maybe I'm just like in my cycles or something. But it's like, it's gross.
That was old, like, confident Joel, though. Mm-hmm. Like, remember, like, when you see all the scenes of them meeting? Because back when all you know about him is that he cheated, and you're like, why do you even like this guy? And then you see those flashbacks, and you're like, okay, I kind of get it.
Oh, yeah, you totally, like, the proposal scene was very charming. Very
or him
charming.
At the party when she's, like, blonde.
But
like,
this is too much for me. I'm like, Joel's kind of moist.
But you want him moist but not horny.
I don't know what I like. I like when he's broken. I like when he's broken. This, he's a little broken Ken doll that I can fix.
This sounds right.
Aww. Right?
This
you like
right.
when he's drunk in bed going, I like when this he's is drunk. The anniversary I like when that I ruined my life.
Chasing down a guy going, she's good. I like that,
she's
Joel.
Good. She's good, Mitch. May finally comes back and everything's fine.
But the way
him.
She comes back, the way he got her back, I actually think... Great ASP execution.
The details, but I was an idiot.
This is great.
I tried to call her, but the number she gave me isn't hers anymore.
I thought this was awesome.
It's never hers. I don't know her address. I know she's in medical school, but I don't know which one. Actually, I don't really know anything about her.
The cutting back to the silent room.
Mm-hmm.
She's got these great eyes.
Of gamblers.
And she's smart and funny.
Okay.
She's incredibly mysterious, which is frustrating.
This is the audience at the Oscars during Renee's.
I'm sure you're all thinking, how can he know so little about the person he's dating?
We artificially inseminate cows.
Clearly, she doesn't want me to know a lot about her life. And frankly, my life's been a mess this past year, so I wasn't too eager to share either. I was married, and I cheated on my wife, which is not something you want to tell your new girlfriend. Not that she's
high
my girlfriend.
High school drama students are doing this. As auditions.
Oh, yeah. Let her know all this.
Cut to the extras in the 1960s pulling out their phones and checking Twitter.
It won't be the same if she's not there. Oh, and really stress that eyes thing. I think she'll like that.
That ruined it for me.
I didn't like that either. But the rest of it, I loved it, and I love
the slow.
The execution is so great. Yeah. Oh, perfect.
It was just great up until that point. It's another, I mean, sorry to keep bringing it up. It's The Outsider again, where they had it and it was great and then they ruin it right at the last minute by being cheesy.
No.
Yeah, emphasize that part about her eyes.
Yeah, I'm like, Joel, you suck. Like, you, what, you wrote this down at home and like, that's how it felt.
Uh-huh. It's probably.
Like, he was doing a set.
I know, I still see it a zoomed out view. I think it's a return to form for them to do this like move of having him speak to an entire room of people who do not care mm-hmm. about what his story at all mm-hmm. and have a, it's so ASB to have a character just like have a super introspective monologue about their own life story and they don't care about anybody else at all. It's kind of like their idea of romance is like super intense, like being really inconsiderate of a large group of people
yeah.
is their idea of romance.
Fully. Yeah, I mean, and it reminds me of some of the stuff I really responded to early in, like, Gilmore Girls of basically, and especially now that the bottom has pretty much fallen out of, like, rom-coms theatrically, mm. where it's like, where are the rom-coms happening? They're basically happening on TV now. Like, you don't really mm-hmm. go see a rom-com. I guess to All the Boys I Loved Before on
yeah.
Netflix. Netflix kind of does stuff with it. But, like,
The Long Shot.
The Long Shot was great.
The Long Shot. And then it made yeah. no money. So it's I like... know. 5 years from now, The Long Shot's a HBO Max special.
Well, because he didn't know how to market it. There's no way to market a romantic comedy anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's nice to see the genre sort of thriving in these TV shows still, mm-hmm. and especially in the way the Paladinos do them. Because when they do just like zoom in on that, or even like Rory to Dean being like, I love you, you idiot. Or yeah. the Luke Lorelai, will you just stand still and all that stuff. It's
or the
like
Dave speech to Mrs. Kim.
Oh yeah, carbonated water freaks me yeah. out and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all there. Clearly it's made an impression. And then May and Midge, goes to the Button Club. Mrs. Moskowitz is threatening people with a baseball bat to like break
oh,
their
I
legs.
I love that.
It was great.
That was great.
Yeah. Perfect use of Mrs.
Moskowitz. Perfect use of Moskowitz.
And then May and Midge meet each other and have a little.
And this was sort of weird, right?
Yeah.
I knew he was married.
I figured you did.
Good bluff.
Back at you. So, you're the girlfriend and you're the wife.
I'm gonna be a doctor.
I'm gonna play the Apollo.
To which May should have said, you?
Yeah. May should have said, oof.
Yeah.
Like I'd look at
luck. Yeah.
Do you know where that is?
Yeah. Okay. I just thought that was such a weird, I didn't hate it, but it is weird that someone would go, I'm going to be a doctor. It's like, she's so cool and self-possessed
yeah.
the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird to me to make
it
her
is.
Petty like
me
that.
Me too. I didn't get that at all. I was like, why are these two getting along? And then suddenly not. Like, it's so much better that they get along.
Yeah, I loved the bit that she pretended like
yeah.
she didn't know
like,
and then was
anyway.
Like, I knew. I thought that was kind of fun. And then for it to change like that was, like, strange. Yeah. Also, when Midge gets on stage afterward and tries to save the moment of the club, she says, I'm Mrs. Maisel, Joel is my soon-to-be-again ex-husband. I was like, okay.
I know. I yeah. saw that. No consequences for that?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Is May paying attention? Or is she still thinking about her eyes? Like, what's... Did you hear that?
Is she just thinking about her eyes?
They're still married. Yeah. Again.
Well, let me play that clip.
Yeah,
play
it. Sorry.
Gentlemen,
with
I'm Midge Maisel, Mrs. Maisel on stage.
And as Anthony Trolley forced us by law to do.
For a while. I've been touring with Shy Baldwin for a few months. Kids have completely forgotten me. They've gotten very jaded having a mother in show business. I showed up the other day, my daughter pointed to her diaper and said, sweetie, would you get this? Then she lit her cigarette, refilled her deck, my bottle, and fired her agent. Now both her parents are in the biz. This is what happens when you leave. Remember the first time?
Great callback.
If you don't know,
to Joel's
this club
infidelity.
Is owned by my, again, soon-to-be ex-husband, Joel Maisel.
There it is.
Cuts to May being like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Here tonight to say, that half's mine.
So amazing.
So good.
So, yeah, so this, here's what irked me about this. And they've established now that she's famous.
Yeah, what?
Like, now she's famous, right? So she comes on stage and everybody's like, it's, oh my God, it's the Mar-. Like, so is she driving people to the club? Like, this is crazy.
No, she's not driving. I wonder if it's a local thing, though, or if it's like, well, Joel's friends are there.
Yeah.
So they know her.
But no, maybe. That doesn't feel like how it was. She's like, well, it's nice to know my hometown hasn't forgotten me. It feels like she's like, I'm famous in New York, which is crazy.
Yeah, my, it's New York. You're not like in Dayton.
It's Chinatown. Like, it's not even Upper West. It's
I get that.
It's just weird.
But maybe the opening, like you said, is like usually when you open something, the people who come are like loose acquaintances friends. And it's a bringer. It's a bringer night.
It's a bringer. Okay, I'll accept it. But like, it didn't feel like that. It felt like she was like, my hometown's welcoming me back for a tour or whatever. And it's like, bitch, no.
Right. Yeah. I buy it at the Gaslight because she's there all the time and those are regulars.
Yeah. RIP to the Gaslight. Well, we'll probably be seeing it more next season, I guess, now. Although, still bummed out that Jackie, RIP, Brian Tarantino, he passed away. Really sucks. Don't mean to keep bringing it up.
He did.
So we were skipping around, but then, like, Susie loses all of the money on the fight.
Yeah.
Well, I get it. They were threading it pretty good in the season. Like, it got
really
progressive.
Did.
It was, like, a nice, elegant... They put it in just enough that it could just
be... I didn't think
they
were going to. I called it. I was like, I don't think they're going to make anything of this.
I think you said that on the podcast.
I think they're just using it as a stupid like byline or a C-plot for Susie, which I hate.
Yeah.
But then they actually used it, and I love it.
But did anything happen? Not really.
Well,
because then she just burned down the house. Because I was like, this is like a real problem. Like, she lost all her money, and she burned down the house and was like, yeah, the insurance will cover Midge's half. And you're like... Oh, so everything's just fine.
Well, it'll cover Midge, but, like, she's destitute again.
Right. She's destitute. Yeah. But then also I'm wondering, her not going on tour, plus the money being gone, does that affect, like, her down payment on the apartment?
Oh, yeah, the apartment's
it's
gone.
Oh, it definitely fucks that up. But I also am like, why doesn't, like, fucking Moish just... It's a weird thing to go to Moish about it. Like, Moish shouldn't be that big of an obstacle for his grandchildren to have a home.
Yeah.
A little bit I'm like, fuck you, Moish. Just, like, give her a good payment plan. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
Like, whatever.
Yeah, she goes back to the garment district. They play that song that they played in, like, the second episode when you first go.
Oh, they love that.
Amy Sherman Tal Palladino, by the way, saw 1917 and loved it, I'm sure. Given the way they use shots on this show.
Seriously.
She's like, I would have done that if I could have.
That's what I thought when I watched 1917. I said, you know what this reminds me of?
Is Gilmore Girls or Mrs. Maisel?
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, for sure. The garment district.
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, he's just soldiers instead of dresses.
Yes, exactly. And then so Susie has to go to Joel and make Joel the money manager, which feels real messy.
Whoa.
Oh,
this
hated
is the least favorite part of this show.
Didn't
episode.
Care for it.
Okay.
Her justification being...
You can't just come in here like that. And...
Like Dave.
I mean, why? Why me?
Right.
There's business managers and accountants and a lot of other people who are trained to do this. I mean, hell, Shy must have a team of people you could ask.
Because you love her. You will always be in love with her. You won't let anything bad happen to her, ever. It has to be you.
God, she's so good.
She's Let me tell her, okay?
Friggin' rocks.
Can I please?
No,
she's amazing.
Money. She knows the other shit. Everybody does.
I know she's good because everything she's saying doesn't make sense. Like, because you love her. You'll never let anything bad happen to her. The guy who left her for his secretary? What are you talking about?
Bummer.
He'll never let anything bad happen to her.
Well, because that one thing bad he did, he can't ever now let anything bad happen.
But it's like, Susie, you love her too. Like, why are we acting like that's the... You should absolutely be hiring somebody.
But, okay, here, how about this? In universe explanation, Susie loves her and is...
Like romantically?
Whatever.
Okay.
In whatever way, and platonically.
Yeah.
And is fucked up with money to the extent that she is so Al-Anon that she will take... all of Midge's money and give it to her ex-husband as opposed to putting it with a money manager whose job it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's so, because she's, her family life is so fucked up that she doesn't have boundaries.
Yeah, no, but I see her like, her success in managing Midge being governed mostly by love.
Yeah.
Because she didn't like love Sophie and then it turned out the way, so if you're Susie, maybe you're like, well, this takes like actual like, affection and respect and love and trust. So, well, even though I have this gambling problem, so I guess I'll, who's the next best person for it? So I'll go to Joel for that stuff. Mm-hmm. So I guess it makes some sense.
It kind of, I mean, I'm not defending it as a real, like it's definitely a phoned in plot point to make the point that they're trying to make, which is that Joel still loves Midge.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But, like, we know Midge's cool.
I don't think that's what it is.
You don't think so?
I don't think
I think it is.
Wait, that it, like, we as the audience are supposed to have a revelation of, like, he's still in love with her. Oh, my God.
Not maybe not a revelation, but I think they are trying to say, like, we know we brought in, like, a super cool new chick mm-hmm. for Joel, but don't get too attached because, you know, they're still
well,
something.
They just want, I think they want to translate, like, this ball is still in play.
Yes.
We have not resolved this part of the story yet. Midge and Joel have not moved on, even though they both have new romantic prospects. They both have kind of figured out their relationship post-divorce. This ball is not, we're keeping this ball in play so that we can move on to the next season with more cliffhanger energy.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess I just totally didn't read it that way.
Oh, it felt like stoking the fires of will they,
it feels
won't
like
they?
You didn't read it at all.
What? I do so much research.
It feels like you didn't, well, it feels like you didn't watch it all.
No, I watched it three
so
times.
I just want to, if you want to talk off mic about this, I don't know.
I read four recaps of it and took quotes from
You took quotes?
No, not
you
took
plagiarized?
Quotes. No, I didn't plagiarize.
Jesus. No, talk about Joe Biden.
How did we get here? Oh my gracious.
Speaking of new romantic things, not that it's new, but what did you guys think of the scene with Benjamin?
Benjamin. Oh.
Loved it.
So here's the pattern on Paladino shows now, as we can see. So Benjamin was such a Max Mediz nuts in last season. Of like they were engaged and then just kidding. And then the whole thing like fell apart. But then in both those instances until this one, you don't see the primary victim's reaction to it.
Yes.
So you don't see Mediz nuts' reaction to it. And actually in this one, same thing. A cliffhanger where the main character hurts someone, Shy Baldwin, and you don't see his reaction to it. It just totally takes place off screen. So this was such a funny way. I thought like such a smart way to deal with it where it's like, oh no, he's like a person. He's not like an obstacle in the way of your like glory of your career. It's like, oh yeah, a guy got his feelings hurt real bad. And so like, how do you steward that emotion? Which is all, by the way, triggered by Rose's bullshit. I just
hated that.
Hate this character now. It. What a bummer. Oh, what a 180 they did on us
just
all.
Just no justification for anything she does at all.
So,
she's like a fucking Bold and the Beautiful mother-in-law.
She's trying to stay relevant, like,
exactly.
Anyway.
Yeah.
They're deaning Rose, in a way. Mm. So Abe gets tomatoes thrown at him, and he's going to be a Village Voice guy, and Rose is going to be, like, a matchmaker, I guess. So she goes to Benjamin's place of work again and says, like, oh, I found a girl. And then he gets pissed off, rightfully so. He should have been pissed off the first time, probably.
Is Rose hoping that by matching people up in that society, she will get to a place where she matches up somebody so successfully that they not only give her, like, fancy glasses, they're like, here's an apartment.
I think she's gonna do it for money.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, what are you trying to?
I think she's gonna make a business.
Okay, all that's, right. I think
she's, that might be interesting.
Which is a thing.
Like, was it back then, though?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the 60s, matchmaking services?
Oh, I definitely think so.
Mm. Okay.
Were they as
or
good
at least
as Hinge?
She's gonna trade it.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm like, if you're gonna keep trading.
Yeah.
But I guess, because how do you do the rate on that? Is it a flat rate? Is it an hourly thing?
If anybody could figure it out,
it's
it would
Rose.
Be the
and
it
not
would be
Susie.
The Weissmans.
Yes. Yeah. It's true.
So then Benjamin goes to the diner and he's like, this sucks. What the heck? Mm-hmm. And then they have the following confrontation.
I have to understand. When
part
I accepted
of
your proposal, I was fed up with stand-up. Mm-hmm. I was thinking of quitting. I thought maybe comedy was just a phase and I could get married and hop down to the Gaslight once or twice a week, do a set.
Ugh.
Like a bowling league with better shoes. I thought maybe that could be enough.
I had that face.
Oh, yeah?
And Shy Baldwin calls. And a lightning bolt went through me. I just knew this was it for the rest of my life. No turning back. And I knew that would be a problem.
How?
How what?
How did you know it was going to be a problem?
Benjamin, come on.
Come on, what?
I talk about my life on stage. My whole life.
I talk about my parents and my children and my relationships and my failures and everyone else's failures and my girdle and my sex life.
I have seen you on stage.
Twice. You've seen me twice. It would be different if we were married. It would be constant. You wouldn't be able to handle it.
Oh, really?
My stand-up was the reason that Joel and I...
I am not Joel.
I know.
I got 2 feet on the guy alone.
You are both men.
What the hell does that mean?
Proud men. Strong men.
Did you ask? Did you ever say, hey, Benjamin, if I constantly talk about you on stage, is that a problem?
No, I didn't.
That's right. You didn't even give me a chance. You left me out of the equation altogether.
I would have been on the road. We would have been separated a lot.
And then coming back together would have been sensational.
Aww. Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, you fucked up, Mitch.
Yeah,
you
so
broke
bad.
My heart. Marry him.
Oof. Marry him.
Nice.
Do not send your mother again.
Nice. I don't have attraction for Zachary Levi, but I did love when he was running around the diner screaming and being like,
I'm
like an angry, I'm like a loud building. Yeah.
You get mad when you're
an
tall.
Angry building.
My buddy Ross, he's like 6'4", 6'5", and he has a, similar thing where he has to be overly friendly to make people not scared.
Yeah.
He has to be like, hey, what's everyone? To like really soften himself up just to be baseline not intimidating. So it is truly a thing for tall men of a certain personality type.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love this where it's like, yeah, face it like head on what you did, what's happening, the kind of like trail of bodies you're leaving in your wake rather than just like getting caught up in your own.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I thought it was really, really well done.
And
yeah.
I like that he walks away going like, you maybe fucked this up. We don't have any clues in this scene to tell us otherwise. There's nothing in this like momentary interaction
that gives her an out
that gives her a way of being like literally like she is like sacrificed real good prospects for this career that may or may not pan out, and it might not even have been the right thing to do.
Yeah. And I think it plays into the central thesis that I think Amy's talked about before of like, yeah, this show's kind of about you can't have it all. Like, we're not going to end the show with, like, I think she thrived as a stand-up and then was a wife and mother, and she was great at all those things equally. Like, the point of the show is, like, you cannot have it all. You have to pick one. It's going to come at the detriment of something. Everything has a cost, so count the cost. And this is kind of, like, really playing the truth of that and saying, yeah, this came at the cost of, like, a nice guy who you probably weren't in love with, but still, like, your callousness.
But you never gave a chance anyway, too, because you thought he wasn't up to it.
Yeah,
and this proves that it's not really like that's just her messy brain.
Yeah,
categorizing him as like not good enough.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Now, unlike anything I've ever talked about on the air, I actually stand by Squarespace. I actually do because I've used it for everything I've made. Literally, GilmoreGuysShow.com, the very website for this very podcast, was made using Squarespace. How beautiful is that? KevinTPorter.com. I made that using Squarespace. My old bake shop website, that was made using Squarespace. Because you can do it all with Squarespace. You can sell content on your website. So exclusive stuff behind a paywall. You can sell memberships, courses, or sell files your customers can download like PDFs, music, or eBooks. You can do that with Squarespace. You can do analytics with Squarespace so you can figure out who's visiting your website and why, and figure out how to get traffic and where's it coming from. You can also have people do flexible payments on Squarespace. Make checkout seamless for your customers with simple but powerful payment tools. Accepts credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. How nice is that? You can also do email campaigns, so there's constant outreach for your stuff and people know where to find you. So I'm going to let you know where to find Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain. That's squarespace.com/GilmoreGuys. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now let's talk about your social battery. Maybe right now it's bursting at the seams with energy. Maybe it's a little drained. Maybe you're one of those people like my friend with their phone battery that keeps it 2% all the time, even when they stay home all day. And they definitely could charge up if they wanted to, but they don't. Well, regardless of where it is, it's important to understand why it is the way it is. Why is the battery low when it gets low? Is it because you're feeling less social? Is it because you're feeling sad? Is it because of emotions you've yet to identify? Or maybe just boundaries you haven't set for yourself yet? Either way, it can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, maybe you don't. Maybe you need a little more alone time. Well, either way, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. This is so important because I've been in therapy for 10 plus years, for some would say, technically, 11 years this month, and it's helped me so much understand where I get my energy from, how I use my energy, how to better use my energy, and how to maintain things in a way that's sustainable and healthy and good. And that's to do, of course, with boundaries, but also just understanding who I am and what I want. And I couldn't have done so much of that work without therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GilmoreGuys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GilmoreGuys. I thought Brosnahan was really good in this episode.
Me too. I thought really she was awesome.
Really awesome. And especially
by the way, Garrett walks by when I'm watching this, my boyfriend, and he's like, "But she's a goy." That's what he says. And I'm like, "But he's German. Like, he's not a Jewish person at all." But he's like, "A Hasidic guy said he thought I was Jewish once." So.
Points for so life? Like, what does he want?
Okay.
Want to pass?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say neither of them are Jewish in the scene. Yeah. Like, Levi's not Jewish and neither is she.
Yeah. I watched this at first and I was like, oh my God, it would have been great. He's right. She just didn't ask him. But the more you think about it, you're like, but like, would it have been for her to be gone that much and freshly married? Like, mm-hmm. I think that's him being sort of, magical about the situation where mm-hmm. he's like, you didn't even ask me. You screwed up. And it's like, or maybe she just knows that it wouldn't have gone great. And even if he weren't threatened by her talking about him on stage, being apart that much is super hard when mm-hmm. you have a foundation.
Yeah.
And they barely had one.
Yeah, that's
so,
the thing.
You know, how is that going to work out? So I think it's...
I think if there was a guy, like, I think they're trying to make the point that, like, if there was a guy for her that would have been able to deal with it, this would be the guy. And it still isn't good enough. So that's the sacrifice.
Right. And she just kind of went...
Yeah.
Because to be honest, it is like a selfish thing. Yeah. She's like, I want to go focus on this. Yeah.
She can't really say that to him, but she's like, I'm picking me and not you. And it probably would have been a better scene if she was like, I know, it's fucked up. I picked me.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You know? Where she's like, I didn't want to have to worry about you.
Yeah.
Like, even if it were fine, he's like, why didn't you ask me? I didn't want to worry about you.
Yeah.
I wanted to make the decision. I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so I did it.
Yeah.
For you two in your own lives, given how much you guys are out of town, is it just like picking a person who's secure enough with it? Or is there like still a lot of work you have to do?
No, it's just picking a guy everywhere you go.
oh, okay. So like Road Strange is your solution.
Port in every storm.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
So having a devoted lover.
Just in every area. Port in every storm.
A whore in every area cord.
A whore in every cord.
Yeah, I mean, I was engaged last year for a few months and it didn't work out. And that was somebody who was like able to work from anywhere and was very like, was a total Max Medes nuts as far as like, this is like a nice guy and, you know, maybe not like super stimulating. Like we don't connect on like a higher level, but like I love him and we care mm-hmm. about each other and mm-hmm. he supports me and like all those different things. And as soon as it fell apart, I was like, oh my gosh, I just, this was the only lifestyle I could see working for me. Someone who could work from anywhere and be home when I'm home and travel with me sometimes and, you know, mm-hmm. is kind of in the business but doesn't do what I do and like understands enough. And coming out of it, you realize like, oh my gosh, it is so hard to find somebody who you both connect with on that mm-hmm. higher plane and also fits in with this fucked up lifestyle where yeah. you're up all night. It's insane. It's why comedians stay comedians, because yeah. like, who else is going to get it?
Yeah, yeah. So many factors have to align.
That's why I think it's so much easier for male comedians to find mm-hmm. a girlfriend who's ready to just like sit at home and wait for him to come back from tour, because like,
or the travel with him.
Yeah, the fact is, women's egos aren't so fragile that they don't have to, like, if their guy is the famous one, it doesn't have to mean anything about them or whether they're good enough as people. Like, it doesn't, we don't reflect back on them. Whereas, like, this is what I've been saying about Joel this whole time, is like, he can't take the fact that he's not, he keeps going for these women he has to play second fiddle to, and he can't stand it. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, because you're the second fucking fiddle.
Yeah.
And I, with Garrett, like, just found somebody who's like, doesn't mean anything about me if you're, like, famous. I don't care about that at all. Like, he just is like, not jealous, because he just doesn't have that kind of, I honestly think he has like a woman's ego. He just is like, it doesn't that mean anything about me.
Truly. No, but he's, I think, like, and we're speaking pretty heteronormatively, and it would work different in queer relationships.
I don't acknowledge non-binary genders. Yeah, yeah. Goodbye. I am canceling myself from this conversation.
Oh my God.
And I'll say, I have an ego too. Like, I would have a hard time if I was in a relationship with somebody who was like so far above me and getting like everything I wanted and I wasn't doing well.
I think I would too.
I would have a hard time with that also. Yeah. So, yeah.
Like, know. I think I have the heteronormative male ego too.
Yes.
In that circumstance.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah. if it is not, and I'm not trying to gender it, I'm just saying like there is a type of person, generally women are taught to be more accepting of being a support figure and how to thrive within the confines of support figure, which is why I love The Long Shot so much, because it was like, there's so many kids movies out these days, but The Long Shot was the one of the adult movies I've seen where they portray a man in a support role who's absolutely like, the happy ending for him is to be in a support role because that's where he thrives.
Yeah.
And it's not a shitty, like, oh, I had to give up my dreams. It's like, oh, I finally figured out to give up my dreams and now I'm so happy.
Yes.
You know, like, it's amazing. And like, it's like that. And Moana was like that.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, in a lot of ways.
In a lot of ways. There was this other movie that I just recently saw, Frozen 2.
Loved it.
Like, the guy in Frozen 2, he has this whole, like, how do I deal with the fact that I have to wait around for my girlfriend, and what does it mean about me? And then he's like, you know what? Fuck it. I love my girlfriend. It's rad.
Alice, you gotta watch Little Women.
Have you not seen Little Women?
Yeah, this is what the whole thing is about.
I know, but I've seen Little Women.
No, but you haven't seen this Little Women. It is so... It's such a radical adaptation that plays into those things that you're talking about in terms of like what you can live with and male-female autonomy and what it means to be support or not support. I feel like you'd really respond to it.
Yeah.
But Timothée Chalamet.
Maybe when you get back, we can watch it at home.
Okay.
Let's talk about that scene where she finally confronts her mom about what I love is how she framed as choosing to be disappointed in her.
That's a good one.
I'm sorry that you are so disappointed in how my life turned out. I'm sorry that you can't understand the turn it's taken. I have certainly tried to explain it to you, to include you in it, but you don't want to understand or be included. You just want to be disappointed. I'm sorry that I am a comedian and that you can't watch me on stage and that you still think I'm a prostitute. I'm sorry that Joel left me and blew up my life, but he did. He left. He blew up my life. I did not want that to happen, but it did happen, and I had to do something about it. And one of these days, you are going to have to acknowledge that this is the new reality. That I am, for the first time in my life, taking charge of my own destiny, just like Joel is in charge of his life, and so is Benjamin. Maybe you need to get a life of your own, and you can stop trying to manipulate the lives of those around you.
You're right. I don't understand what your life is or why you do what you do. And yes, I do feel that comedy and prostitution are one of the same. And no, I don't know how to explain it to my friends or my rabbi. I don't know how to explain that my daughter leaves her children to travel around with a tiny part-time plumber in a hat. I don't understand why it's funny to talk about your parents on stage, why it's fun to hear people laugh at their mistakes and misfortune. But there is one area where you and I are in perfect agreement. How precarious a woman's life is when it's dependent on the whims of a man. That is a lesson I have also learned the hard way. Your father blew up my life too. He took everything away in the blink of an eye, and now it's up to me to get it back, and that is exactly what I intend to do. Now,
if you got a match, Meg.
It just came, it came down to, like, I'm busy.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah, it really wasn't. It barely addressed what Midge said. It was just like, you're right, I am disappointed, but I'm not choosing. I just am, and now I'm dealing with some stuff, which was kind of nuts, but, hit home for sure.
Yeah, I mean, this is, it feels a lot of working out personal mother. There's always a fundamental brokenness in the maternal relationship of all these characters, right?
Yeah.
Did you hear, was it on Good One that they talked to Amy and Dan?
Yes.
And Amy,
it was a great interview.
Was it the interview where Amy said, we agreed that we knew going into this that, like, Midge will never be as happy.
As happy as she was when she was with Joel marriage. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that.
My gosh. That killed me. Mm-hmm. Like, that was so hard. That's like, I mean, I felt that way. I felt that way a couple different times, both times that I was in relationships where I was like, this is the one, I would give up comedy for this, like, which is so gross to even admit. Or you're like, I would take a step back if I wouldn't give up and, like, be this person's wife and have a family. And I was really happy, like, during those times. Mm-hmm. But I'm always better after they end. Like, I'm always a better person. My life's always better.
But you're not happy.
But I'm not. I'm happy, but I'm not. As I'm not in the bubble, mm-hmm, like I was. And that's what they talked about. It was just like she was in this bubble of, like, safety and comfort, and, like, she knew what she was doing and had this role in this life that was all laid out. Mm. And then it got blown up, and she still, whenever she references it, it's so sad because you know that she's, like they said in that interview, like, so much better and so much, like, brighter and more important, and her life's going to be amazing. But she will never feel, mm-hmm, as content, happy, safe as she did back then. Mm-hmm. Her highs will be higher, but her lows will be lower too, and she'll never have that, like, baseline of just,
I also,
let's make a casserole.
Like, it's like the bubble of youth, right?
Yes.
Because it's like she was younger then, and she didn't have all this, like, she was just a new mom. That's, mm-hmm, all she was. And, like, she didn't have to deal with anything else. And so eventually, when you're a new mom and then you become an older mom and then your kids go away, it's like, yeah, you're never going to be as happy as when you were a new mom, but at least you're a fucking touring comedian. You know what I mean?
And her, like, kids are ancient. I mean, they're like 5.
Yeah.
It's like, get over it.
Wait, I couldn't understand if collegiate was a grade school or what
it
was.
Oh, my God.
What is that?
I just took it to mean like a charter, whatever the 60s equivalent of a charter school was.
Yeah.
Essentially like a private school rather than a public school, because that's what the whole contrast of the I'm pregnant conversation is in that opening scene. And then she even brings it up at her set at the Button Club,
like,
or whatever
not
it's
going
called.
To school in Queens.
Yeah, which is like, okay, like, it is one of those things, and we all complain about, ooh, like, one percenter problems or rich people problems, but especially on this show where you seem to, like, not care at all about your kids and hate when they sing you the alphabet, like, caring about collegiate school and, like, the education. They can't go to school in Queens. It's just, like,
they
so
say
draining.
He's gifted.
And
Joel's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, he's like, okay.
Our son sucks.
Like, you don't even know him.
He's just like a mini Chester.
He pulls out a picture. She's like, oh, that's Ethan.
Yeah,
okay. Parenting a different child.
Yeah, no, but that's true what you're saying, Alyssa. Almost like about youth, and you think about the way your friendships functioned in high school or college, and, mm-hmm, like, yeah, those were the best times. And, like, in a way, they were your most content.
Yeah, because you were stupid.
You
didn't
so
know
stupid.
What was out there.
But it's not like, Midge is so enlightened now. But, well, maybe it is. I don't know. Like, because if the arc is that she'll never be that fulfilled, and that the things she's done whilst thriving are still, like, kind of a survival mechanism, mm-hmm, I'm not sure the point that they're trying to draw with that.
I think she's more fulfilled now. I think she was happier then.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
I think it was simpler, mm-hmm, for her. I do think she's more fulfilled now, but I think, you know, becoming more fulfilled by pursuing, like, a creative artistic endeavor is, like, you are kind of also signing up for, like, the isolation and the uncertainty. That's, like, the big thing is,
I cannot think of anything more isolated than being a new mom on the Upper East Side in the 50s. Like,
really?
That sounds like
Imogene.
Yeah, she's probably going. She's going to those classes. She's walking,
like,
around.
I would want to fucking kill myself.
Well,
that
sounds
awful.
But if you had never done this, maybe you wouldn't have felt
that way. I can't imagine. I'm since birth, not somebody who would have never done this.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. See, I don't feel that way. I feel like
be this.
So I feel the same way, but I feel like if I had not found this and I had just done that, I might have been really happy doing that. But it, once you know, once you like open Pandora's box or whatever.
Yeah, it's
you
the burden
when my mom
of knowledge
found out I wanted to have a big wedding, she was like, well, this is a weird phase.
That's so funny. And I guess it was, kind of. I'm having the reverse trajectory where I started with ambition and now I want to be a stay-at-home dad.
Now you're a single dad with no kids.
Single dad, no kids, which is what Alice wants to make my bio on everything from now on.
On all your dating sites.
On all
single
my
dad
dating.
With no kids.
All my dating sites, I'm definitely on.
Dude, you'd get so many hits with that, for real.
Yeah, he pulls like, oh, God, no, he's oh, it's fun.
That's, I mean.
Hey, Kevin, you're scrolling too fast.
We can do a profile doctoring later. And, okay, let's talk about the Apollo stuff.
Can we get to, my gosh. Before we get to that, because it feels like we should end with that, Imogen?
Oh, Imogen's going to take
I
business classes
now. I don't understand that. Does anybody get to explain that to me?
That
what
felt
happened?
Like part one of two. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it felt like we know we're getting season four, so let's set up the...
I cool guess shot, though, that
it
slow-mo.
It was a cool shot, but it
with
also
the feeling
was like,
good?
She was like, okay, great. So it's never going to happen to me? Great. Now I'm going to go to secretarial school? Why?
Because I think she needed something... that was hers that he didn't get a say in the same way like he just left to go see what it would be like. She's like, all right, well then I kind of need to know what it would be like for me, like, or maybe it was her getting like an insurance policy if she's gonna take him back of like, well, I need to know that I have a job that I can go to.
You're right, though, it wasn't clear. It was a cool shot, though.
I like the
cool shot.
I like the turn because you think she's going to get him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then she walks into secretary class.
Yeah, I did. but the turn for me wasn't like, oh, it was like, what?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Those two sounds.
It was mysterious. It was, for me, it was more like,
Yeah, it was a Tim the Tool Man.
Yeah. So she gets to the Apollo. Susan can't be there because she has to burn a house down for insurance money.
Yeah.
If you had a similar set like this and your manager couldn't be there, would you be pissed?
So pissed.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So pissed.
I feel like I would be
I was glad that Reggie was pissed for her. Like, tonight?
I kind of like people not being at my bigger sets. Every, like, late night set I've ever had to do once, like, is made worse by the, like, hoopla.
Oh, yeah.
Like the extra people there. Mm-hmm. It makes me more nervous. I just want to be there by myself. Get in, get out.
I want them there, but I want a room that I can shut the door.
Mm.
And mine are pretty good about being like, you need some time? I'm like, I do need some time. Mm. And they're like, cool. We'll be out, you know, in the hallway or whatever.
So she goes see Paddington crush it.
It says Paddington 2.
Paddington 3, original OG. Meets her backstage and then has a confrontation with her and her manager, who, if you watch Mindhunter, this past season.
Oh my God.
It's an actor named Albert Jones who played one of the main detectives in the latter half of that season.
I loved him.
With the Atlanta child murders in that show. So then they talk to each other.
Wait a minute. You're Mrs. Maisel?
Yes.
Are you kidding me? This is the girl opening for Shy tonight. She's the one that got your spot.
I did?
Yes, you did. She's Mom's Mabry. You really think she should be opening for you?
She's not opening for me. I'm opening for Shy.
You got the prime spot, Shirley Temple. You can't read a program?
I didn't know there was a program.
I'm gonna talk to Shy. I'm gonna really talk to Shy.
Marcus, hush now.
It's not right. Who the hell is this little white girl anyhow?
Oh, Marcus, you back off now. That audience out there is gonna give her a tough enough time without you in her face. It was nice meeting you, Mrs. Maisel. Welcome to the Apollo.
Love it. Love it. So such a good payoff.
Yeah.
It really is, though. The last three episodes, like, let's do all the social stuff now in terms of like the intersectionality of like, what are you doing here, white lady? What are you
but
talking
it
about?
It just feels like, you're right. The only way if ASP could have redeemed like almost a lifetime of like not serving characters of color by having Midge bomb at the Apollo.
Yes,
he's so good.
It would have been so good.
Booed
it would
off have been so good.
Yeah, she would have bombed with that material. She would have got some chuckles up top with the stuff about like landing planes at LaGuardia.
Yeah,
and then they were like, "That's my cookie. Why are you talking about?
Yeah,
what's schmaltz?"
Someone in the audience just like, "That was for Shy." They just started turning on her.
Yes.
Throwing tomatoes at her. Well, and that gets into, not to skip ahead, but one of our Twitter Q&As was Alicia asked, did anyone feel bad for the extras they hired to be in the crowd at Midge's Apollo set? Like, okay, you have to watch this white lady make subpar jokes on this historic stage and act like it's the funniest thing you've seen in your GD life.
I think they just had Wanda Sykes actually perform for them, and then they laughed, and then they just...
I mean, that would have hope that's what happened. Better. Yes. Yeah. So good. I mean, I loved how real it was. I think it's so real to have a confrontation with somebody who's just like, you shouldn't be here. And then the conversation she has with Reggie afterward is my favorite part of the whole season.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you clipped it
out. Yes, I did clip
did
a little bit of that out. Yeah.
Okay, which part? Probably the part I'm thinking of.
They call me a white girl.
You've got, so let's hope so.
I don't know.
Midge.
They loved Moms. I shouldn't be on after Moms Mabley. They're going to hate me for that.
Oh, you've been talking to Marcus.
Called me a white girl.
Wow, low blow.
He's right. There's royalty on the stage tonight. I'm not ready for this. I haven't earned it.
It doesn't matter if you earned it. It's here. You got to do it.
Hell yeah.
I'm nervous.
Hey.
I'm never nervous, but right now I am really, really nervous.
Where the hell is Susie?
She had a family thing to do.
Tonight?
I shouldn't go out there. This is a very important show for Shai. It's a comeback show. If I fail, it could look really bad for him.
Then don't fail.
I am gonna fail.
Now look at me. Yes, that's gonna be a tough crowd. They will love you or they will hate you and they will let you know their verdict immediately. And maybe you should cut back on the Jewish brisket talk a little. You know Shai. They know Shai. Get out there and talk about Shai.
I'm not following.
You're great at riffing. I've seen you do it.
Oh, yeah,
Shai is like family to these people. They want to hear stories about him. Stories about the road, late night craziness, gossip, tantrums. They love that sort of shit.
You want me to talk about Shai on the road?
Yep.
Shai.
Yes. It's not something you should do anywhere else, but here in Harlem, his hometown, they'll eat it
Seems
up.
Seems very leading.
You calm now?
Yeah.
No.
Good. You're going to be fine.
On his part?
Thank you, Reggie.
Like...
You really want to thank me?
Yeah, it's his
if
fault.
If he goes back over what he said, it's like, oh, fuck, yeah. I said that. I said it shouldn't do this anywhere else, but here they know him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's Susie's fault for not being there.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people's fault and Midge's fault for just not realizing things you should know. But, yeah, the line where she goes, I, like, don't deserve to be here and I'm not ready, and he goes, it doesn't matter if you're ready, it's here.
It doesn't matter if you earned it.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you earned it, it's here. Oh my God, I love that so much. Because I have had so many meltdowns like that where I'm just like, I don't deserve it. I can't do this. I'm not supposed to be here. And the fact that he didn't go, you're great. You're going to do great. You're amazing. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Which is maybe what Susie would have done. It's just like, you're fantastic. You're amazing. The fact that he just goes, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
You don't. Like, I don't deserve this. No, you don't. That doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You are getting it. So
it's like saying you have to take care of rather than like gassing up like, you are the best Jewish lady comedian.
You have to be a worker among workers today. Yes. You have to go out and do your actual job because you're the person we got to do the job.
Yeah.
End of story.
And it's so subjective in this business. There will always be people who got something that you deserved more and opportunities that you get that somebody else deserved more.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get caught up on that stuff of like, oh, but here are these five people that should have got. I got a Netflix special. I cried for an hour. I was like, I was like, I did not deserve this. I can name all these people that should have gotten it before me. And at a certain point, you just have to like, people telling you like, no, you're really good doesn't help because you go, no, both is true. I work really hard and Midge works really hard for who she is. But it's like, yeah, should Moms Mabley had the better spot? Probably, but that's not what's happening. So work hard and do your best and be worthy of the opportunity you got because you're the one who got it.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful perspective, Taylor Tomlinson.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice. And Netflix, you better fucking promote her special. I swear to God, because you fucking don't do it, you can't blame it on people not watching women's comedian special when you don't fucking promote it.
Dude, I better see that side by side with Chappelle.
I better see that motherfucking billboard. I swear
Joe
to God,
Coy.
I'm coming at mine.
I'm gonna torch this
mine comes out
city.
In the middle of. I kid you not. Every week around me is five very famous white male comedians. And I'm like, okay, I hope it doesn't get buried. They've said, they're like, it's good. It'll be good. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, this will come out when it's already out. So I guess you guys know better than I do. But this is we're recording before it comes out. So I don't know. But
we'll see.
The future exists.
I know. I am looking forward to
it. I may be alive then.
You might be alive.
Who knows?
Yeah, get ready to see what Pete Davidson thinks about gay people.
I mean,
yeah.
Thoughts and prayers to all
involved.
That was
a good eye retreat. Like, I'd rather not.
So the actual set. See, so I do the part where Midge Maisel crushes at the Apollo. Mm-hmm. I don't like that on its face. But then the execution of how everything goes down and all the, like, shifted responsibility and good intent but poor execution on everybody's part. Because to a degree, this set is Sophie Lynn in season one again, where she, like, outs someone's actual identity, right?
True.
Where she's like, no, she's a rich lady. It's all an act. And right. But this is, like, more of a subtweet about
this is just Baldwin's, her being stupid.
Yeah, it's just being dumb.
Yeah.
But it's not being malicious per se, but it's just being, like, naive and, like, oh, yeah, you're not, like, not even, so if the narrative isn't, you're not that funny, or you don't know how to do this room, then that's how inexperienced you are. The narrative is actually, you are not intuitive to what those jokes would mean, mm-hmm. and how sensitive another person would be to it, and how much that could hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it is like it's a failure, even if it's not a failure on an audience level. It's a failure in on a human relational level.
It's also a repeat of another thing that got her in trouble with the Sophie Lennon.
Yeah.
Is that what you just said?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But she's friends.
You weren't listening to me when I said
I just, you know, it's a lot.
You okay, buddy? There's some cold meds today.
There's some DayQuil involved.
We can do another take of it where you can say it and I can be like, oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, my God. No, but I do want to put this in where you offer it. That's super cool. What a generous man.
I'm going to play a little.
He's a generous man.
Single father. No kids. I'm going to play a little bit of the set. Not all of it, because it hurts.
How do you compete with those cheekbones? Those Ava Gardner cheekbones? The man is so gorgeous that Arthur Miller's sniffing around him. He's the only person I know gorgeous enough to play Romeo and Juliet. So I've been hanging out with Shy on tour, and I discovered that all he has to do is sing. He has a guy for everything else. Well, just about everything else. No, he pretty much has a guy for everything else. You see him on the road, his guys falling over themselves outside his door. Whatever you need, Shy. Let me tuck you in, Shy. Let me get that makeup off your collar, Shy. Don't be scandalized, it's his. We were on the road a while, and coming back to New York, I was a half a day on a plane, a train, a bus, a cab, a rickshaw. Shy comes home. He doesn't need a plane. He doesn't need a train. He just puts on his Judy Garland shoes, clicks his heels together three times, and says, there's no place like Harlem. There's no place like Harlem.
What I wonder is, how did Shy hear about this?
He was off stage.
He was?
Yeah, I think he was just off stage listening to her set. That's how
the other sets work. Because she directly introduces him afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
But when he comes out and sings like normal, I was like, oh, I guess it's going to be fine.
Yeah,
so,
he didn't look pissed at all.
No, but he's a great performer.
Hey.
Yeah.
All the great performers do that, I guess.
I thought she was going to introduce him and he wouldn't come out. Mm-hmm. And that would be the thing. Mm. But it was so much worse that they showed up to the plane and just found out.
Well, I thought she would explicitly say, you know, when he had sex with a man, or like that she would say something explicit and that it wasn't going to be innuendo, but that she would just kind of get, taken over. And then at the end of it, I was like, I guess it's fine. Like, it really did. It was a true mislead of how that would go down.
Yeah. Well done.
That was a really interesting, dance they shot, too. Again, ASP just doing a musical in the middle of the episode.
Yeah.
Chicago.
This choreography is so interesting.
Yeah, very good. Very fun stuff.
But yeah, listening back to that Reggie speech, you're like, he said gossip and tantrums. Like, he wasn't like, just poke fun at Shy.
He's like, do late night shenanigans, stuff that only you saw, that nobody else saw, that only you know about.
Oh, when he got beat up by that guy? All right.
Say his name is Dwayne. So then they do, it's such a Casablanca. It's such a Casablanca on the runway, right? The way they shoot in, the smoke and the lights and everything. It was so nice. And here's what makes it so good is you cast another person, it's probably fine, and it's probably still a good scene
That's
and
true.
A good show.
That's really true.
But Sterling, maybe just Sterling K. Brown is now just like a prolific crier and stuff. He's just like, That's one of his things. And there's tears in his eyes during this. So he's not pissed.
Yeah.
He's sad. And it's one of the things where it's like, you have to do this and you don't want to, as he alluded to in the in the previous scene.
I think he loves Susie. I don't think he loves Susie.
Yeah. He's whatever on Midge, but Susie's his
road dog, his ride or die. Yeah. Right now.
And they have a camaraderie.
And he feels guilty because he knows it's his fault, but he isn't my fault. I felt like he was going, I didn't know.
He's like, in a way is like, yeah, I should have protected him and I didn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to go tell him that. And fuck, it sucks. I'm throwing you under the bus, but that's the way it is. And I completely respected him for that.
Yeah.
Because I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. Midge has to pay some fucking dues at some point.
Right. And also, like, what is that going to do? Then he fires his opener and his manager?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, it's not, he knows that, like, okay, that's not the best thing for Shy.
Your act last night.
My act last night went great.
It's what you said in your act.
What did you say in your act?
I talked about Shy.
You said a lot about Shy.
It did.
You told me to do that.
Personal shit.
What kind of personal shit?
Reggie, you said
go out there and talk about Shy.
I know.
You said he was their family, that they knew all about him.
I know. But I didn't know that you knew all about him.
Knew what about him? Why is everyone talking in code? I made some jokes.
Some jokes that hit too close to home.
But I didn't hit home. I was at least two houses down.
Shy knew what you were saying. That's all that matters.
What did you say about Shy? I thought I was doing what you told me to do. Please, just let me talk to Shy.
No.
I have to tell him this was a big misunderstanding.
He doesn't want to talk to you.
Then you tell him. Tell him you told me to go out there and do that.
I am not going to do that.
Why not?
Midge, Shy is my boy. I'm supposed to protect him. I'm not going to tell him I sent some girl up there to tell the world that he's... what he is.
What is he? Please, they were jokes.
Judy Garland shoes.
And then she gets it.
Reggie, this can't happen. I mean, me and Shy, we're friends.
You are not friends. You were on tour together, and now you're not.
Susie.
Hey, Reggie, please. This was obviously a big-ass breach here, but there's got to be something we can do. Anything. I don't care what it is. And we'll cut our rate. We'll do the Christmas show for nothing. I will iron your fucking jockey shorts. Just please, please don't do this.
I'm sorry.
Fuck, sorry! Come on!
Susie?
Yes.
You're going to be right where I am someday. You'll see.
Oh. Best supporting. Oh my God.
That whole scene.
And exactly what you were saying. Like, you hire him for this scene. It just lends, you know, because even somebody who's doing their absolute best, like, he is the kind of caliber.
And he's doing five things at the same time.
Exactly.
And just like, he loves
her. He's running that table.
Can't. Yeah. Oh my God. What a fun thing.
So cool.
And again, I mean, I guess in retrospect, it was like a one season deal probably for him to be on this show at all. Like, I don't, maybe we'll get a follow up like Levi in season four, but
he's probably gone.
I mean, I don't see how you would integrate him back.
He
into
literally
the show.
Gets on a plane at the end of this.
Yeah. To go to like Sweden.
Flies away.
And we're like, but maybe.
I have to go. My planet needs me. Shy Baldwin, I didn't know that you knew. Is this a good Shy Baldwin?
One thing I'll be happy that gets on a plane to Sweden is Kevin's
my impression
of Sterling K. Brown.
Susie, I didn't know that she knew.
Who's talking to me right now? I don't know.
Okay, and this actually boomerangs back to what we were saying at the beginning. If Judy Garland was code for queer back then, because that's what tips Susie off is like, oh shit. Like, that's the thing where it's like, oh, he's gay.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe.
That's what they're writing it was.
Or maybe
anyway.
It's anachronistic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, what a nice end scene. I didn't love the Elvis Costello song at the end blasting through. No. Did you?
I don't know. I kind of like that song.
I like the song, but it just felt like, okay.
Yeah, you're like, Sterling K. Brown is crying.
I would love if each consecutive season of the show was less episodes. So season four, six episodes.
Ooh,
we got four episodes in season five. So that's all killer, no filler, baby.
That's a cool format.
Season 10 is half an episode. It just keeps whittling down and down.
Season 11 is like a little spot in front of a YouTube video.
Well, season 11 is Quibi. That's what Quibi is.
Which is definitely going to
work. A service we all love.
Mm.
Let's do some Twitter Q&A.
Tweet, tweet.
Okay, a lot of good cues for this one. Debbie says, if Mitch had been able to talk directly to Shy, could she have changed his mind? Is that one reason he wanted Reggie to deliver the message? No. No, and I like the way that it happened the way it did, because it was like, this is why managers are necessary for this unpleasantness, and and because Shy Baldwin is a diva, and he is like someone where it's like, can't be bothered with, and did have tantrums, and like makes the band wait around for 2.5 hours, so I like that.
And that is so, like, when she says, we're friends, and he's like, no, you were on tour together, like, that was also so real, of like, that's like people
have
who
you had
on-
that moment?
No, but I think we all have that, as far as like, if you're on the road with somebody for a weekend, even, you're like, oh, we hung out all weekend. It's like, yeah, but you're not going to talk every day. Like, you'll see them around, or people talk about like working on movies and you get really close to somebody and then you never talk to them again.
Yeah, it's like camp.
Yeah, it is. It's totally camp.
Beth asks, how did they not get around to signing the contract?
That's really weird.
Yeah. And
that
it
was
weird. It was a weird thing to throw in too, because it felt like an easy thing of like, she was gambling so much that she forgot to, like, even if they put in one of those little beats. But then just the fact of, like, yeah, I guess you should have signed that contract.
Right.
Was, like, so out of the blue and funny.
Yeah, that was it almost would have been, it would have been interesting, I think, if they tried to fire her and they're like, we have a contract, and then she just had to open for Shy, who hates her. For a full season.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have rocked.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, that contract. Oof.
Laura asked, have you ever experienced similar stage anxiety? Also, do you think Reggie's suggestion to do the piece about Shy was fair? Which I think we talked about the latter half. But the former half experienced similar stage anxiety. You talked about a little bit. You've never had any of that.
Oh, no. I have it so frequently.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought you were shaking your head. No. Why?
Because...
Does it give you some juice?
Yeah, well, because it, like, reminds me what it felt like to start, and it's like... It's good to know that no matter what you do and what you accomplish, there's always going to be instances in which that are bigger than you.
Mm-hmm.
This thing that you do is always going to be bigger than you. Like, you hear about people, like in that Jerry Seinfeld documentary, he was talking about how, like, you know, you've returned to comedy when you're like doing an hour in front of a packed room and like you're killing and you're miserable.
And you're you know, like, who cares that I made these idiots laugh?
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's that level of fame isn't really available to women, so it's kind of nice that we don't have to get there.
Yeah, and that's a nice positive spin.
It's a nice positive
spin. Misogyny
on
and patriarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get nervous like night to night anymore, but I do experience, like we talked about, that like imposter syndrome a lot. I feel like where I'm like, I haven't earned this, but I have to do it, like that kind of thing, which is so stupid. It's such a female thing, that we work so hard for things and then we get them and we go, oh, I don't deserve this, and I should sit down.
Yeah. Weirdly, because we're told we don't deserve it.
Yeah.
Like, whenever women get anything, especially if we're attractive, we're told we don't deserve it. We got it because we're attractive.
Yeah, or
Alice,
you got it because you're a woman.
You gotta watch Greta Gerwig's Little Women.
You do.
I've never heard of it.
You had... I'm gonna...
The only reason she gets to direct things is because she's hot.
Is that... But... Is
she is hot.
What?
I won't make eye contact with Evan after I say that.
Alice. And you haven't even seen the movie.
I know. I'm just trolling you.
I know we spent 2 hours talking about Marriage Story that I cut up, but Greta, she comes for Greta. Ben asked, do you have a good recipe for soup?
Wow.
Was
Ben,
that in this episode?
Really relevant.
Okay.
Was the soup stuff in this episode or another episode?
I think it was in another one.
Oh.
What soup was in what episode?
Someone's sick. Vaughn's has a great chicken noodle.
Okay, great.
Go get it.
I've never done it. I used to get a soup at the Bourgeois Pig on Franklin that I really liked.
Ooh.
That thing was straight from the box of like a Trader Joe's, like
totally.
Tomato cream, but it was still good.
Yeah, it's nice.
Patricia asked, did Amy Sherman Palladino really want the audience to sympathize with someone who outed a black gay man? And the answer is...
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, she did.
Unforge.
Well, I do think that's why she didn't out him. Like,
she did innuendo. Is that what you mean?
Innuendo, but like in her mind, she wasn't telling the audience anything that wasn't an open secret.
Yeah.
Because often it's an open secret, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're from this neighborhood, like, people support you even though a lot of them know this thing about you. It's like, that. I believe she thought it was an open secret and that she could just like skirt the issues. Like, I think that's...
Hmm.
I think that's believable, to be honest.
Yeah.
Based on what Reggie said to her, yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. And then finally, Zoe at the Zobel asked, or it might be Zoe, damn. I don't know, guys.
Well, we have to shut it down.
What do we
shut it down?
Okay, let's shut restart down. The beep, podcast. Beep, oh, I'm beep, so. Beep, I think I've.
Welcome back.
Between Midge being kicked off the tour, Benjamin's confrontation, and Susie's committing arson to pay off debts, why do you think the show could not be grounded in reality throughout the season instead of just throwing every consequence at the wall in the finale? Which is a great point. Because it is like, it's just like.
It's harder to write that way.
Bopping around and doing radio.
Because if you're going to give Daniel some episodes, you can't like wait.
What consequence? No.
You can't like, if you're going to give Daniel some episodes, you're going to have some fluffy shit during your, you know.
What was our impression of Daniel in season 2? Yay.
Yay. Oh, that's right. Yay. Look, she's.
Fart joke. He got a fart joke on this show in the last episode. They said fart on the subway. Oh. Carrying on that Family Guy torch. Oh. Passing it on to future generations.
Pass the torch, Jay Inslee.
All right. Well, that was season 3 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. We did it, gang. We did it.
We did it.
Was it a good season? It was an uneven season.
Uneven, yeah. It's hard because this was the best episode.
Yeah, so you're left with a high for sure.
Yeah, you're left going, that was pretty great. Yeah.
It really does remind me of like Gilmore season finales, like season 4 and 5 finale, where it's like, wow, why is every episode not like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then makes you kind of mad at those like, what are we doing episodes a little bit more. Definitely the latter half was better than the former.
I mean, I think the most Occam's razor reasoning is because it's just harder to write this well all the time.
Mm.
I guess. Okay. Maybe because it's a two-man band operation.
Yeah.
It's but just them.
Even when the episodes aren't as strong, I'm like, this is still like so beautiful to look at and fun to watch that I kind of don't care that much. Mm-hmm. If you can binge it. If I was getting like an episode a week trickled out to me, I'd be mad.
Mm.
I'd be like, this week just sucked. Yeah. But the fact that you can binge and go, all right, we'll try the next one.
Mm-hmm. The show probably benefits from a binge in ways other shows don't.
Yeah.
MVP of the season obviously was Rose. We loved everything she did. It was so consistent and in character and fun
MVP
to watch.
MVP of the season. Well,
yeah,
let's
who won
see.
The season? I mean, MVP for me, SKB.
Yeah.
For sure. Sterling K. Brown.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because I feel like that was such a nice texture and rhythm of the show that it doesn't natively operate in.
Yeah. He's just a different, everyone else feels so theatery in a way that I really like, but he's just a different. It's like when Meryl Streep did Big Little Lies. We were like, what?
Yeah.
What are you doing in there? Like, this makes no sense.
Yeah.
I thought he like kind of brought some credibility to it almost.
Yeah. No, people bent around him. Do you know what I mean? Like, he made Alex Borstein probably 15% better in those scenes with him. And I felt
he's like Jean-Luc Picard on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
With all those other actors.
Oh, is that how you feel about the other
cast? Well, that's kind of a known thing that happened. Like, he just elevated the
actor. They cast one of the greatest, like, British actors alive to be on a, little.
Yeah, and he, like, brought up the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was just good to give Alex Borstein someone to hang with up there.
Yeah.
Because everyone's great, but she's just,
Yeah.
And if you had to cut one character from the main cast in season 4, who would it be?
Rose.
It would be not Sophie Lennon. She's also in the main cast.
She's in the main cast?
Yeah, she was main cast for season 3. Can you believe it?
A series regular?
Yes.
Are Joel's parents main cast?
I believe they are.
Can I get rid of them in a package deal? I don't care.
Yes, you can.
They're so annoying to me.
Yeah, it goes.
They're like supervillains at this point.
Brosnahan, so Borstein, Michael Ziegen, Maren Hinkle as Rose, Kevin Pollak, Caroline Aaron as Shirley, and Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah, they do. I know they're just like kind of comic relief at this point, but I'm like, okay.
Yeah, we're done. Done with that. All right, great up, gang. This was so fun. What if Alice is a little sick and a little tired, so she's laying back.
MVP of this episode.
Is Alice for surviving, Taylor, it's up to us to be the last two people on mic now. Alice is turned away from the mic.
Turned away.
And she can no longer fathom she's taking a selfie, and we're both going to be in it. Wasn't that nice? Alice, I love you. Thank you for doing this show with me.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's your show too.
I mean, kind of. Not really. You know
what?
It's your show,
Taylor. Thanks for doing the finale with us.
Thank you for having me.
We were so happy to book you.
Having yourself.
You're welcome.
What a nice, like, legitimate, like, stand-up's perspective. And
I'm really glad.
You had great takes on all this stuff and real life experience.
I know. Sorry to focus on Alice so much in those moments. Kevin. I'm like, make eye contact with both of them. But you know you're speaking to Alice. No, about this experience.
There's a peer to him, and you know what? I'm fine being a support role
to
two women that I admire.
He really is. He makes a bit of a meal out of it, but he is.
Yeah. No. Am I a performative sub on this podcast? Sometimes.
Certainly. Yeah.
Where can people find you, Taylor?
TTomComedy.com, at Taylor Tomlinson on everything, Quarter Life Crisis on Netflix.
She knows her plugs.
Boom.
Inside and out.
Very cool.
Hell yeah. At Alice Wetterland everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm, of course, at Sterling K. Brown everywhere. He wishes.
Oh, does he?
No, I'm fine with who I am.
Who's this guy?
Did somebody say who's this guy?
Who's this guy on my Twitter?
It's me, Sterling K. Brown. No.
Goodbye forever.
One last time.
For the road.
Okay. Well, now we'll go out with the song they go out on in the show. Peace, Love, and Other Drugs. That movie, like, Love and Other Drugs, that Anne Hathaway movie.
Love and Other Drugs.
And we'll see you next year for season 4 of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
We'll see you next year.
One last time. Just kidding. There'll be more times. Bye.
Four more years.
Four. Yeah, something we want to chant 2020 for sure. Yay.
Taylor.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.